running away from people now, 20, 10, and gone. Moneal, 67-yard touchdown run.
I've got reporters' notebooks older than Seth.
Fonte was always soft. Can't win on the road, they say.
DeVito, pop pass, end zone, touchdown, and the ball game. DeVito, in relief, wins it for the Orange.
This is Orange Nation, brought to you by Charles Heating and Air Conditioning with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Good afternoon, everyone. Glad to have you with us. Alongside Seth Goldberg, I'm Stephen Fonte. We welcome you into a Wednesday edition of Orange Nation, game day edition of the show, as we get you ready for Syracuse and Notre Dame. Got a couple of guests lined up for you. We missed out on Adrian Autry yesterday. He was tied up with practice. We will have Red on in about 15 minutes from now. The team, of course, in South Bend, Indiana, getting ready for tonight's rematch with the Fighting Irish. And then coming up at 12:30, our good friend Chris Carlson from Syracuse.com will have him on to talk SU basketball. Also SU football, though, as the 2020 schedule was filled out this morning, the ACC releasing its entire schedule at 9 a.m. And now we know the order of games. We knew who Syracuse was going to play and where. Now we know the when, Seth. And we all, I think, assumed, maybe with the exception of my boss at Channel 9, who he called it last night, by the way. He said it's not going to be Syracuse Clemson to start the season. He called Boston College, and sure enough, that's how the season will start. At Boston College on a Friday, September 4th, that's how the 2020 season will kick off.
Dodged a bullet there.
No Clemson.
I mean, that's kind of the one overarching thought I have on this schedule. I can't tell you how good any of these teams are going to be. You know, we're lying if we say we know anything other than Clemson's going to be really good.
New coaching staff at BC.
Exactly. New coaching staff at BC. It's their first game with new head coach, new coordinators, the whole deal. Their talent is just whatever to begin with. So you look at it and say, all right, that's a much safer landing spot for that first game than a Clemson game would have been. It's a much more friendly position to be in, having to go to Boston College rather than going to Clemson. And let's be honest, you don't have to go to Clemson week one. Like, forget everything else. Forget that they've got the ridiculous talent. Forget that they've been in the national championship three out of the last 4 years. Forget that they've got everything possible going for them. Push comes to shove, which stadium you rather play in? Boston College or Clemson?
Yeah. For a lot of reasons, I think it's good that they avoided Clemson right off the bat. And you look at where it falls now on the schedule. It falls 2 weeks after the bye week. So they've got five games before the bye week. And you like your bye week generally to fall in the middle of the season. And Syracuse has that. They play five games before the bye week. They're off the weekend of October 10th. They've got Liberty the following week at home on the 17th. And again, that's, you know, Liberty is an FBS school now. And we saw this past season that, you know, they've got some talent there, but that's a game you should win at home. And that allows you to get ready for Clemson.
So they went to a bowl game.
They did. And so you've got, you know, 3 weeks coming out of that Louisville game. You've got a bye week, and then you've got Liberty, and then the week leading up to Clemson. So essentially 3 weeks to get ready for that Clemson game and to get healthy for that Clemson game. So I think for a lot of reasons, and it allows you the chance, you know, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but you have the chance to at least build up some momentum. You know, again, if you haven't seen the schedule, it starts at BC on the 4th. You're at Rutgers on the 12th, then home for the dome opener against Colgate on the 19th. That's the new and improved Carrier Dome. September 26th, you're at Western Michigan, home for Louisville on October 3rd, and then the bye week. Very manageable first 5 weeks of the season. Then coming out of the bye week, home against Liberty, then that showdown at Clemson on the 24th. And because the front part of your schedule, you know, you're front loaded with a lot of road games because of the dome construction, that means that the back end of the schedule, you've got some extra home games. So, you know, three of the last five games are at home. You've got Georgia Tech on Halloween, you're at Wake Forest on the 7th of November, home for NC State November 14th. Home for senior day on a Thursday night, November 19th against Florida State. That's kind of an oddity that senior day won't be on a weekend. And then you close out the season at Heinz Field on the road at Pittsburgh. The way that it lays out, again, it's a manageable schedule and you avoid starting the season with a loss. I mean, you may lose to BC, but if Clemson's on the schedule, it's almost certainly a guaranteed loss to open the year.
Right. It's not a guarantee that you're going to lose that game, where if you're playing Clemson, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Ross, Travis Etienne, it is
with a new
nearly,
defensive coordinator, new right. offensive coordinator.
It is nearly a guaranteed loss that you go and play that game in Death Valley. At least you get Boston College now. And given the start of your year, I'll throw this out to you. And again, I hate doing this today on January 22nd because we have no idea how good any of these teams will be. So rather than pin certain games down, I will ask it this way. If Syracuse is going to make its way back to a bowl game, they've got to go 4-2 to start the year? Yes or no?
I think that's quite reasonable. Yeah, I mean...
like, just given who they have on their schedule, you go to Boston College, to Rutgers, Colgate, at Western Michigan, and then you get Louisville and Liberty, two teams that Liberty you beat, not very impressively, and Louisville you lost to, but you get them both in your home building. So can you manage to swing 4-2
yes.
in that stretch? And then, by the way, it sets you up for the back half of the schedule where, sure, get past Clemson, you've then got three of your last five games in your home building. So Again, I don't want to do this and pin it down and say on January 22nd, well, they got to beat Boston College, they're going to beat Rutgers, they're going to be... I have no idea.
Right.
But big picture here, if you are going to get back to a bowl game, if you are going to get back to where you want to, you've got to get off to a fast start given the schedule you've got early.
Is that the same question? Get back to a bowl game, get back to where you want to be? Because... is that where we're back to now? We're back to talking about whether or not this team's going to go 6-6. And maybe we are.
Did you read Tommy DeVito's Instagram post?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
What did he say?
I'll have to find it.
Give me the Cliff Notes version.
Nobody's talking about us. We're going to prove the doubters wrong.
Well, everybody's saying
blah,
time of year.
Beware the quiet soldier or something like that.
I'll be honest with you. After that 10-3 season, I thought we were done with the... can this team get to 6-6? Like, I thought we were done with that question for at least a few years, but I guess we're not. And obviously I know what happened last year, but I think they get back to a bowl game. I regardless of how the schedule laid out, I think they're getting back to a bowl game next year. And you know how I feel. Like, I think that this past season went south for a lot of reasons. And I think there is enough talent in this program, and I do believe in Dino Babers. I think there's enough talent in this program to certainly right the ship and get back to a bowl game. But, 6-6, again, I look at 6-6 next year as, like, that's the bare minimum of it. That's not the goal.
No, it's what you should do.
That's, like, the bare minimum of what this team should do. Are we on the same page with that?
Yes, I agree with you. I think that this year's team had... 6-6 or better talent. I think that the year
they underachieved
the same way that I think the team in 2019
overachieved. Absolutely.
And, you have years like that, and the pendulum swings back and forth, and maybe this year it'll stop right in the middle, and you'll be 7-5.
The truth is somewhere in the middle, I think.
Or maybe you'll swing back up and you'll go 8-4 again. I don't know, but these last 2 years have been, I think, wildly on the opposite sides
the
of what they really
yeah.
are. And so I don't know that either of these last 2 years have been true indicators of what this program is right now and where this program's at. I got the post. He also put it on Twitter,
okay.
Steve. Here's what Tommy DeVito had to say. The 2019 season was not what we envisioned as a team. We did not reach our goals, and we hit rock bottom. This offseason is about growth and development. 2020, there will be no hype. There will be no talk about Syracuse football. There will be no expectations. But for us to lose, the only people that know what we have is us, the 2020 Syracuse football team. No more talking. Beware of the quiet man. New year, new team. One dream. Hashtag brick by brick. Hashtag we build.
So they're going back to the chip on their shoulder. I think that's good,
like,
because they had the chip on their shoulder in 2018 and things went well. They went into 2019 with a lot of expectations, and they didn't handle success all that well.
I would also say that the change in expectations isn't why they weren't good.
I know, and I was going to get to that.
The chatter about the team isn't why they weren't good. You know, making a big deal around their spring game isn't why they weren't good. Doing that video series isn't why they weren't good. Having a party at a nightclub to unveil your new uniforms isn't why they weren't good. It's stuff that you should be doing as a college football program in the ACC.
And you talk about all that, and that's why it bothered me that I don't want to say that the coaches and the players came out and said that, but there were references made to, well, the media hyped us up and the fan, you know.
You hyped yourself up pretty well. You helped
everyone in that regard. You helped the fans in that regard. You helped the media hype up the season and the 9,000 extra season ticket holders and so on. You know, they made a big deal about that.
How many emails did we get about
a lot
about the new season ticket holders?
A lot. That rubbed me the wrong way, that there was, you know, some suggestion that maybe, you know, the media had a hand in it and the fans had a hand in it and everybody was too excited and that, you know, the players bought into it and, the players were reading their own press clippings and so on and so forth. Again, that's not our fault. You know, we call it like we see it. They were coming off a 10-3 season. It seemed like they had more talent. It seemed like the schedule was easier. And obviously the big question was the offensive line and no Eric Dungy. And they both turned into being, you know, difference makers. The new offensive line turned into a disaster, and the no Eric Dungy, obviously Tommy DeVito was wildly inconsistent last year. And so those two things played against the Orange big time, and we saw what we saw. But to your point, it was not the media's fault. It was not the fans' fault. It was a team that, you know, they didn't handle success all that well, and they had some things go against them, and, you know, it led to a losing record. And now they re-rack, and I think it's a good thing that they're going back to the chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
It works for them in 2018.
Right. You should probably always have some kind of a chip on your shoulder, even if expectations are high. You should probably always be feeling that way. But what do I know? I haven't been in that room. I have no idea. That being said, you know, it's fun to be talking football on January 22nd, right? Like, it's something that in the past, if the schedule came out, you're just kind of looking at it, passing glance, and it goes, you know, and it kind of goes on its way. But given the season that they had 2 years ago and following it up with that, you're kind of more intrigued. Here's one more note that I've got on the schedule, and you mentioned it. Senior Day is on a Thursday. I really liked how the ACC did the Thursday night games last year, where they were off a bye week for the most part, and Syracuse and NC State played on Thursday night. Both of them came off the bye. Neither of them had truly a short week. I can't imagine a world where playing on Thursdays after playing on Saturdays is like having the best interest of the student-athlete in mind.
And at least for Syracuse, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just going to say that we knew who SU was playing. We knew where they were playing them. We just didn't know the order of the games and the dates they were going to fall. And I think, by and large, I like how this schedule sets up for Syracuse. The one thing that jumps out to me is, you know, back-to-back games in terms of a Saturday at home against NC State and then Thursday at home against Florida State. The good thing is
they're home and home.
They're home and home, and Florida State has the same deal. Florida State is playing on Saturday and then Thursday. It's not like Florida State's coming off their bye week. So Florida State's at home on Saturday the 14th, and then they've got to travel for the Thursday night game. So again, if you're going to do it, you would prefer to be the team that's at home for both games opposed to the one that's traveling.
And if you're the league, you've got to put both teams in the same situation. But it's just kind of a larger point. If we're going to say that these people are student athletes and that we're treating them as kids, probably not in the best interest of student athletes to be playing on a short week.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And so I think that's the one thing you look at and you maybe take issue with from a Syracuse perspective. But other than that, again, I think it sets up pretty nicely. I think it's a very doable first part of the schedule. You got the bye week, you know, after five games. You got Liberty out of the bye week, and then you get ready for Clemson, which is going to be the biggest game of the season, and then three of your last five are at home. I like the way that it shakes out. We do have to take a timeout. We're going to switch gears. We're going to talk basketball on the other side. Adrian Autry set to join us next from South Bend, Indiana, as we get you set for Syracuse Notre Dame tonight. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1. Our take on the day's top stories. It's Today's Business on Orange Nation.
It's my favorite segment every day. We welcome T-Dog into the studio. That's going to stick, I think.
It better not.
You don't like it?
No, not at all. It's terrible. I mean, that's just someone that doesn't have any creativity when it comes to
T-Bone.
I'm known as being very good at coming up with nicknames. Well known.
Are you?
Amongst my friend group, I am well known at coming up with very good nicknames.
All right.
Now, well, some I probably can't say on the air, but I'm very good at coming up with nicknames.
Do you have any nicknames? Nicknames for yourself?
You can't do that. As a very good nickname maker, one of the rules is you can't make up your own nickname.
Right. So T-Dog's
sticking. You guys have to do this one yourself.
I like T-Dog.
I'm sorry, I can't help you
here. See? Seth likes it, too.
That's terrible. I mean, it's horrible. You just go like...
It's terrible.
That's the...
That's the other rule about nicknames.
The default nickname is just the first letter, and then you just add dog to it. Yeah, there's a nickname. It popped into my head. Thanks, Steve.
And that's the other rule about nicknames. You can't tell other people what to call you. Like, if it's your nickname,
it's
your nickname.
You can say you don't like it.
That's fine.
If you really thought the fact this was that you your don't favorite like
it,
segment...
The fact that you don't like it makes me want to call you that even more.
Fair. But if this actually was your favorite segment, you would care more about me to come up with a better nickname than that.
All right. I'll give it some more thought.
Yeah, please.
More than 2 seconds.
Or just drop it. I'm all right with going by Tommy. I've gone by it for 23 years, and I'm all right with that.
It is not a nickname.
You are just absolutely
put it on the poll, as they say. Put it on the poll.
Run up the poll?
Yeah.
All right.
Is Tommy a nickname? That is not a nickname.
Twitch commenters.
All right.
CBW.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Is Tommy a nickname?
I'll throw a poll out on Twitter.
Okay.
Please do.
All right, we'll start out with Derek Jeter. He's obviously in the Hall of Fame, but he was one vote away from being the second.
You know what
ever
else? Is, hold on, sorry. You know what else is a nickname? You? Steve is a nickname.
It is not.
It is.
That is my name.
No,
wait,
your name.
Is it actually your full name? Is your name Steve?
Is your name Steven?
My full name is Steven, but Steve is my name. Yes. That is not a nickname.
Steve is a nickname.
I had a nickname as a kid, and it was not Steve. Okay, Steve is my name.
Fonte?
Infantre.
Do we really want to get into
that?
Did
you change your Twitter handle?
I did a little bit.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going to say, I thought you were talking about me. I was like, no, I didn't.
Yeah, I realized it wasn't that good. It was Tommy underscore Hogan underscore 911.
What are you now?
Just T Hogan 911.
T Dog?
Nope. Put a couple.
He got rid of the underscores.
Yeah, I got rid of the underscores. Put a couple uppercase letters. I feel like it looks a little better.
All right. What's the poll question? I just want to make sure this is fair.
Is Tommy a nickname?
If your name is Thomas, is Tom or Tommy considered a nickname? Yes or no?
What is it?
I'm
it's
also
not,
putting
Steve?
Up, is Steve a nickname?
That's not a nickname.
It is.
No, it's
your name
not.
Is Steven.
This is my name. I'm putting my foot down on this.
That's not how it works.
All right. So continue about Derek Jeter.
I can't believe this was interrupted for Derek Jeter. One vote
so
away.
So disrespectful.
Very disrespectful.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
You know what else is disrespectful? The guy that didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
Now you guys said, I said send the guy to the moon, and I, or the sun,
send
really.
The sun.
Send him to the sun. The moon would be generous. Send him to the sun. There's no acceptable excuse for leaving Derek Jeter off of your Hall of Fame ballot. I don't understand why the writers feel the need to make up for the morons in the past that had Joe DiMaggio getting the Hall of Fame on his fourth ballot. It's just not necessary to make up for what they did. Put him on your ballot. And also, Ken Rosenthal, great person in baseball, great reporter of baseball. I disagree with his take of it doesn't matter that he's not unanimous. Even obviously Derek Jeter is saying it doesn't matter. It's a big deal to be unanimous, especially the second ever.
And he'd be the first position player ever.
And he is the highest vote getter for a position player ever. But still, unanimous makes a difference. It means something.
Absolutely. And this is what I was just talking with our Twitch viewers during the break, and this is what I said. If you look at this ballot, can you come up with 10 guys that are more deserving than Jeter? Absolutely not.
No,
you come up with one player, player that is more deserving than Derek Jeter? And so what is the point of that? Like, what is the point of that one guy leaving him off the ballot?
Well, one of Ken Rosenthal's reasons, I guess, that he came up, that maybe this person did, is that you know Derek Jeter is getting into the Hall of Fame. So you use your 10
to
other
keep
votes.
To keep other people on.
How do you guys feel about that reasoning?
I don't like it because this year's ballot I don't think is particularly strong. Like if you had done it 2 years ago to whoever, like if you had left Griffey off because you were like, I have 10 people on this ballot who I really need to get in, then I would almost understand it because I think the ballot was that loaded a couple of years ago. Now it's not.
No.
It's not. There are not
next
10.
Year. Have you seen next year's class?
It's terrible. There might not be a first-timer who goes into the Hall of Fame.
No, I don't think
there will be. Not only next year, but period.
This is my response to that. So I don't know if it's the same thing, but in my head it's the same thing. It's an analogy that I'm going to throw out there. So I have a vote for the All-ACC basketball team, All-ACC football team. I know you're going to joke about okay.
He's flexing.
He's flexing. Tommy's flexing. I throw that out because think about this for a second. If I know, say like last year, I know Zion's going to win player of the year, but I want You know, oh, I want this certain Syracuse guy to get a little bit of love, a little bit of respect, whatever the case. I'm going to throw him my vote. I know Zion's going to win. My judgment says Zion's the best player in the league, but I'm going to throw this guy.
Bad idea.
Right.
It's different because you've got ten spots rather than one.
Also, to keep people on the ballot.
Right. But hang on. Okay, so I'll use a better example. So the way that they do like the first team. So you vote for 15 players, right? And the first five go on the first team, second five go on the second team, third five go on the third team. So if I know, you know, Zion's going to be player of the year, and I think that, okay, he's the best player in the conference, but, you know, I'm going to give Tyus Battle my number one vote. You get points based on 1 through 15. So it's not, does Tyus Battle belong on the first team? It's, I'm going to vote Tyus Battle number one. So he gets 15 points or whatever it is.
If he'd done that, maybe he would have been first team.
Right. So that's my point. So doesn't that sour my vote to some degree? Because I have a responsibility to vote the way that I see it. Right, it's not my responsibility to keep someone on the ballot. It's not my responsibility to give Tyus more points so maybe he can land on the first team. It is my responsibility to give the players in the order that I believe they should be given, or to write them down on my ballot. So I realize it's not exactly the same thing.
That one makes more sense.
But I believe it's my responsibility to do what I think. And if this guy genuinely thinks that Derek Jeter doesn't belong, he's not one of 10 players that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame on this particular ballot, then he should have his vote taken away.
He's a crazy person.
Yes, they should have. Yes, they should. And here's the thing: we are not gonna know who that person is. I don't think. I have a feeling that it's gonna stay anonymous and it's gonna remain anonymous. And
the Ken Griffey one has. There's three people.
They all stayed anonymous.
Yeah.
Because
people should. They should come out. I mean,
now here's the larger problem, and I think that you're starting to see more and more baseball writers think this way. And I think it's a really valid point. I think I saw Buster Olney, the latest, tweet this out yesterday. They are reporters. Like, for a living, they try and get stuff out there that is not supposed to be out there quite yet. And for a job that is so based in wanting transparency and wanting accountability and wanting to have things known, to then be allowed to keep your vote anonymous on this kind of goes in the face of what you are doing in your day job. Like, this is just one of those things that you get because of all the work that you've done. And by keeping it anonymous, you're going against everything you do.
Yeah, it's very weird. Yeah, it is. And if you are one of 397 people to go against the rest of the people, you'd have to come out and give your reason. Like, in any situation, like, these people shouldn't be allowed to just do this and let it go on forever without your reasoning or what you did. But it really stinks that the conversation became the one vote rather than Derek Jeter, a first ballot icon legend, is now in the Hall of Fame. Like, and I didn't want to fall, but I even fell for the trap. That was my first reaction, and it shouldn't have been. It should have been Derek Jeter is finally where he belongs.
I know there's other things you want to get to, but since we're on the topic of Jeter, let's go to the phone lines. Vito in North Syracuse wants to check in on Derek Jeter. Hey, Vito.
Hey, guys. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now what the solution is to this nonsense and whoever this one guy is who didn't vote for Jeter. You guys heard it here first. Vito from Syracuse, this is going to end up being implemented. So, in my opinion, things are of an opinion if it's like a split, crowd. I mean, if you like climate change, for instance, you might find 50% of people on both sides of that. That's an opinion matter. With this issue, if you've got 99.7% of people that think Jeter belongs in, that to me, it's at a point where it's not an opinion anymore. So what they need to do is they need to decide on a percentage where they think it's obvious this guy belongs in. So if you have 99% of sports writers believe he's in, it's right or wrong, and it's a right decision to put Jeter in. That's the correct decision.
But isn't that what the threshold is? They put it at 75%. So if you get 75% of baseball writers to agree, I mean, I'm sure you know this. It's pretty hard to get 75% of 400 people to agree on anything. But if you get 75% to agree, you're in the Hall of Fame. Larry Walker got, I think 6 votes above 75%. So he's in.
So here's my solution. 75% is a threshold to get in. However, if the vote is 90% or higher, or let's say even 95, where it's like obvious the guy belongs in, and you are one of the people that don't pick him to go in, you lose your vote. You are no longer allowed to vote. And I think they should discount the vote and consider it unanimous, because there's something going on there where the guy was wrong. And I just think that the person should lose their vote or their right to vote if it's at a certain amount. So they have the threshold of 75% to let them in, the player, and they should have a threshold where you lose your vote. Because like I said, in my opinion, once you hit 90, 95%, it's obvious the guy belongs in and you don't know what you're doing or what you're talking about as a baseball writer.
All right. I mean, I don't hate that if you are the one or the you know, if there's one or two
the three
voters,
people who didn't vote for Griffey, that you should in some way.
Right. That maybe you need to defend yourself. I don't know if I would automatically take that person's vote away if it hits some sort of trigger point, but maybe you need to defend. Okay. Why didn't you know, your vote is up for review. Maybe if you're the one, two or three voters that didn't vote for a certain guy, because I could see, you know, like with the steroid era, like you might be adamant. I mean, Seth and I disagreed on this yesterday, but you might be adamant that, you know, in my case, I don't think Roger Clemens deserves to be enshrined. I don't think Barry Bonds deserves to be enshrined. I think they should be in the museum and their story told, but I don't know as if they deserve that. So if I'm, you know, one or two or five voters that are adamant about that, I have my reasons. But maybe your vote should be up for a review if, you know, if you are in the minority like that.
Yeah, I'm a fan of what Vito said. Honestly, if you're, I don't know what the number would be, 95 might even be a little too low. Maybe you have to be like 98, if maybe even 99%, where it's just three people. If you're one of the three people that didn't vote, then you should get your vote taken away, or you just are forced to release why you did it.
The thing that I just think is weird is that this is nothing new. You know, you mentioned DiMaggio not getting in until his fourth ballot.
I was blown away. Jimmy Fox
didn't get in until his seventh year on the ballot.
Bananas.
Ted Williams, Stan Musial, Willie Mays, and Ricky Henderson all got below 95% of the vote. Like, none of it makes sense. How about this? Sandy Koufax, Mickey Mantle, Ernie Banks, Bob Gibson, Frank Robinson, Harmon Killebrew, Joe Morgan, Carlton Fisk, and Eddie Murray. I think that you would argue that each of those has a legitimate stake to being the best player at their position ever. None of them got more than 90% of the vote. Like, this has been the thing with baseball's Hall of Fame forever. And just because forever we've had a bunch of morons doesn't mean that now you, like,
the
doesn't
only
mean
thing
that
I would
now
say,
it should change. It's that we have social media and we can interact with the morons
so
now.
So the Hall started, the first class, I think, was 1936, right?
Yes.
Is that the first class? So the only thing I would say in the defense of the old school voters is that you had, like, great players to choose from, right? I mean, you had to get, you know, and so I don't know, were they allowed to vote for 10 back in 1936 again? I don't know what it was like voting back then, but at least you had, like, you were picking between all-time greats. You're not necessarily picking between all-time greats now, right?
I mean, there was a time on the ballot where everybody listed got into the Hall of Fame.
It was a Hall of Famer, right.
Like, legitimately everybody, and then they had to pick 10. So I understand in those situations how you don't get to that point. You know, I think that there was a time maybe 3 or 4 years ago where there were 12 Hall of Famers on the ballot at the same time.
But there were not this one. I mean,
this one was light. No,
exactly.
This one's light.
Exactly. And I guess that's my point, is that I get, like, 40 years ago that you've got some dynamite names on the list that you're trying to pick between. Not so much on this 2020 ballot.
But we also thought the stigma of nobody could be unanimous ended last year with Mariano Rivera. And I know there's a little bit of the different argument that he was literally the greatest at his position ever. But still, you thought that stigma went away last year, but obviously
not for some people.
No, not for some people.
All right. We got to take a break, Tommy. We'll wrap up the show right after this on ESPN Radio.